and welcome to the Sikkim Sportscast. I'm Steve Cook here with your editor and publisher, Kevin Longquist. Kevin, how you doing?
I'm doing very well, Stephen. How are you?
Well, I'm doing a lot better than I was last week, getting healthy again. Let's do a quick follow-up on Oklahoma and then jump into Oklahoma State. Kevin, the first thing that I noticed is that the last 3 years that Baylor and Oklahoma have played, it has been just pretty much a street fight. These are extremely physical games that these teams play. The last blackout back in 13, everybody talked about how bad Baylor beat Oklahoma. But remember, they came out of that game. They lost Tevin Reese for the season. Mm-hmm. They lost Glasgow Martin for a couple of games. Right. They lost Blake Seastrunk and nearly lost Bryce Petty. So these kind of games are it.
But, yeah, it's a game where it's been very, very physical, and it's guys just laying the wood on each other. And the comment that I thought that performance by Baylor, despite a loss, was probably one of the most physical efforts I've seen from an Art Briles team since Art's been there. And you can throw in those other Oklahoma games, but there was something about this one where the tone of it was just different than what I'd seen.
On the offensive play calling, did it seem to you that possibly Baylor was maybe playing not to lose?
Well, you know, you could certainly make the case that there were a lot of things that were done that dictated the change in the game plan. One was, I think, Jarrett Sims' back injury, which kind of limited Baylor and how much they could use him in the running situations there. Second thing is that, you know, Oklahoma's defensive line was the story of this game in terms of, you can talk about obviously Baker Mayfield and some of the plays that he made, including the final touchdown pass he threw. But for me, it was mostly the defensive line for Oklahoma State that really kind of dictated this whole thing. It really kind of set the tone, and they kind of just pushed Baylor's offensive line around. This is something that I've been concerned about with Baylor's offensive line, Stephen, pretty much for the last month, because to me, they've just not looked all that great. With the exception of maybe the first half against Iowa State, but they haven't looked that great since the West Virginia game, and they weren't that great against Kansas State. They were okay. They did fairly well in pass blocking, but there's something that's going on with the run block, and it's really getting so that they're really having some issues here, because if you look at what's happened with Shock over the last few games, he has really slowed down. Now, the caliber of competition has picked up. That's true. And I know that Kansas State's having a difficult season, but that's on the road up there, too, in Manhattan. But I think this is something that where those kind of things kind of conspired to where they had this lead or where they had these issues where the running game just wasn't as effective. And Baylor's offense is so predicated on what they can get out of their pass or out of their running game that'll set up their passing game.
Do you think that possibly West Virginia, the way that they stacked inside, maybe gave a little bit of a blueprint of how to defense Baylor?
You know, I'm sure a lot of coaches looked at that. I'm sure every single coach that watched that looked at that whole thing and said, you know, there might be something to look at. Now, it's obviously going to be dependent on your personnel. Do you have the personnel to play a stack? Do you want to do more with your linebackers, or are you better when you're just going four up front? It just kind of depends on your personal choice and how you want to do it. And obviously Oklahoma played it more straight up with its four down linemen. But because I think they just kind of beat Baylor straight up. The other thing that really influenced this game, too, is the fact that Oklahoma secondary just basically took Corey Coleman away from this offense. I mean, Corey had three catches for about 50-some-odd yards. I think it was 3 for 57. He had his long catch of 37 yards in the first half, the first possession of the second half that set up Baylor's touchdown scoring drive. And then you never heard from Corey again for the rest of the game. And I think it's a credit to the Oklahoma secondary. And I think those are all the things that kind of work together as to why Baylor's offense just didn't function as well as it normally has.
Now, I didn't think that they moved. You know, they had been previously moving Corey around, lining him up at running back, flipping him over, inside receiver, outside receiver, both sides. It looked to me like they had him mostly on the left outside this game and didn't move him around and give Oklahoma some different looks. Do you think maybe they were simplifying a little bit with Stidhamin?
There's a chance of that. I'm sure that you want to put – and I kind of thought this might be a different look from Baylor's offense when Jared got started as he was starting to prepare for Kansas State. You know, I realize that Baylor has put up the front – that they're going to not change anything that they do. But I'm like, you know, you kind of have to, because you don't want to throw him into, you don't want to throw Jared into a lot of situations where he's just not comfortable. I mean, the guy's making his first start. I know he's had some, I know that he has had some quality plays, you know, here and there. He threw for well over 400 yards at Kansas State. He threw his first two interceptions of his career against Oklahoma. It's a whole new learning experience. I mean, and when you're putting him in to this kind of schedule where you have Kansas State, Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, TCU, and Texas as the way of your adoption into college football, it's a pretty interesting start. And I mean, it, and I think he's handling it fine. I know that he, I just don't think he's going to be 100% when they get ready for Stillwater on Saturday, and how effective he's going to be. I think that's going to be another thing. And so I think the game plan is going to have to be maybe throwing more checkdowns, maybe throwing some more underneath stuff, maybe throwing, obviously they're going to have to try and lean on Shock a lot more to try and get him established. Because even when, even though he rushed for 100 yards against Oklahoma, I thought it was one of those, if you take away his 35 yard run, which you can't, but if you take it away, he only had 68 yards and like his only, his other 22 carries. That really changes how, so there just was not anything effective in Baylor's running game that could, that would make Oklahoma be honest with its defensive front. And I'm sure Oklahoma State's looked at that and said, first thing we got to do is we got to take Shock Linwood away from Baylor and see what it goes from the, see how this happens.
I thought that what Oklahoma did was to basically say, okay, we're going to stop Coleman, we're going to stop Linwood. Baylor try to beat us with anything else.
I think that's right. I think that's fair, and I think that's probably the way other, I think that's a lot of way, or the way that people should think when you're looking at Baylor right now. Look, Baylor's offensive attack is kind of, you got two lead dogs there between Linwood and Coleman. And once you get past that, it's kind of like, well, mm-hmm. You got two other pretty solid receivers. You got a guy in Katie Cannon who has the ability to be that someday. It's just not going to be this year. You got a senior in Jay Lee who is what he is. He can look great on one reception. He can look excruciatingly painful to watch on another reception. I think back to the touchdowns that was and the touchdown that wasn't against Oklahoma. He drops one that goes right off his helmet, and that should have been a touchdown, obviously, and then they wound up scoring anyway out of it. But and then you look at the touchdown pass that he did catch in traffic across the middle of the field where he and Katie Cannon get crossed up with each other and actually collide with each other. I don't know. And then you go to the running game. I mean, I know that they're trying to use Devin Chafin to spell, Shock here and there, which is good. You need to get him out so that you don't wear him out. I get all that. Maybe Johnny Jefferson sees a few more carries. They're going to have to do some things with the running game right now to kind of diversify it up. Maybe some change of pace here because you're getting later in the season. You need to keep Shock as fresh as you can. And this is where you need Chafin to step in and really kind of be more and deliver some fresh approach as we're getting to these last three games of the year so that Shock will be, you know, will be as effective as possible.
That would be a good thing. Now, they're heading up to Oklahoma State. The last thing I saw said that the weather in Oklahoma State was supposed to be pretty good this year. Beats the heck out of the last time they were up there. It was like 22 degrees, and it was ice storming and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, Kevin, if I had to, I believe I would rather go and play at College Station than at Oklahoma State. I think Oklahoma State has got to be one of the toughest venues to play in because those fans are right on the field, and they are all over you.
Well, it's I don't want to say the word bandbox because because it sounds derogatory toward Boone Pickens Stadium, but the thing is that it's a really tight fit in there, and so you've got the fans right on top of you. There's not a lot of room between the sidelines and where the stands start. So they're going to be absolutely on top of you. You know, it was pretty difficult for TCU a couple weeks ago when they lost by 20 points up there. And you know, Baylor hasn't won in this place since 1939. Of course, it looked a heck of a lot different then than it does now. But even when they were up there a couple years ago in the ice and snow or the ice and rain and the deep cold that came through that area, They just didn't react to it very well. They didn't even react to it. I mean, they got blown out the year Robert won the Heisman Trophy in 2011. I think they lost that game like 58-24. So it's been kind of a chamber of horrors for this program up there. And having said that, I do think this is the best team that Baylor will have and the best opportunity Baylor will have to end that. They're going to have a lot of things go right. They're going to have to force some turnovers from Oklahoma State, you know, maybe catch a couple breaks in the special teams in order to give themselves a chance to pull off a win.
Yeah. Now, I was asking, I know that you, I don't know if you've had a chance to listen to the interview that, when I was talking to Trevon Blanchard, but one of the things that I specifically asked Trevon about was, is it a challenge when you have them running two quarterbacks out there? Usually that doesn't work, but Oklahoma State really seems to make it work.
Well, I mean, one of those things is you can say that, well, they've won so many tight games. You know, they pulled out the game in Austin a couple, you know, at the beginning of the Big 12 conference season. They had a rally from behind up at Ames last week in order to pull out a 35-31 win. They've had some, they've obviously had some close calls. And so people will look at it and say, well, see, they're not all that great because they just had to find a way to survive and come back. And I'm like, well, is that the mark of a fortunate team or is that the mark of a good team that you still find a way to win? And I don't care how they did with the number, with how many guys that they played in certain spots of the field. I think Mike Gundy just really understands his team. I mean, he talked about, just to change the segue here for a second, he talked about the way his quarterback situation has really developed between Mason Rudolph, who really is the starter, and then you have J.W. Walsh, where Mason's going to play majority of the snaps. He'll have he'll have 90% of the throws, and you'll have J.W. come in for a lot of running packages and that sort of thing. And ordinarily, that probably wouldn't be a very good idea to kind of rotate your quarterbacks. And I've never been a fan of that. I've never been a fan of that sort of thing. I've kind of thought, well, this probably isn't the way to do it. You know, it really disrupts the continuity of your team and no one knows who to really lean on. But it seems like roles are really identified and what the expectations are. Everybody in the country now knows when Walsh comes in, it's probably going to be a running play. It seems like it is working. It is paying off some dividends. And that's why Oklahoma State is what it is, that they find a way to win. Sometimes they're not very pretty. They're not doing it with much of a running game this year. It's been pretty poor this year. But you know what? If anyone can tell me that a 10-0 team isn't very good, I'd like to shake their hand because you must be doing something right for 10 weeks. It's really hard to win. It's so hard to win.
But one of the things with Walsh is that he is a good runner. And if Mason Rudolph was a better runner, that Walsh probably wouldn't see the field. Mason Rudolph, he kind of has the old joke about Troy Aikman, that he had the mobility of a small office building. Rudolph just isn't real mobile. And in the college game, your quarterback has to be able to move some. There's just something about, and particularly when you run the type of offense that they are. But you're right. You know, you look at Chris Carson, he's got 108 carries for 446 yards. Raymond Taylor, 41 for 262. Nobody's really jumping out at you and saying, wow, that guy can rush. They don't really have a great rusher. Now, the thing that is also kind of interesting to me about Oklahoma State is, like, when you look at their schedule, they seem to have this thing about that they save their best games for playing the best teams. They didn't have a great game against Iowa State, but they got a 4-point win. They didn't have a great game against Kansas State, but they got a 2-point win. They didn't have a great game against UT, but they got a 3-point win. Then they go out and they play TCU. But anyway, so they get TCU number 8 at the time, and they totally clock them. And then they come back and barely beat Iowa State. And so they just seem to be able to play at the level they need to play at.
Well, I mean, obviously, I'm sure we'd all like for our teams to win by, three touchdowns week in and week out. But we always seem to forget that there's another team on the field that wants to win, too. I mean, the thing with the Iowa State game, too, is the fact that was senior day up there in Ames. They want to send their kids out on the right spot. you know, with some momentum and a good feeling and so forth. And they want to pull off the upset. I mean, at the time, Iowa State needed to win that game in order to keep itself in contention for bowl eligibility. So it had a lot to play for. And 2 years ago, they knocked off Oklahoma State and pretty much knocked them out of the BCS championship game. So, you know, again, I'm going to say this before, but it's so hard to win in your league. It doesn't matter if it's in Lawrence or Ames or Norman or Stillwater or wherever. It's really hard to win on the road. I don't care who you are. And so if you win by 5 or 35, more power to you, because you have more than the other guy and that's all that counts.
I think that one of the things now in the other conferences, yeah, you have those rivalry games with those other teams, but like you look at the Pac-12, well, you've got 5 games and the other guys you don't see every year. All of the Big 12 teams know each other, and the more you know the other team, the more you can prepare for them, the more you can neutralize their advantages.
Yeah, I mean, I remember Art Briles saying a couple of weeks ago on the Big 12 coaches call that you've got a memory of everybody, so you just know. And, you know, really, these conference championship games, while they're great, and they are, you know, you get these neutral settings, and you get to play for a conference championship, and it could mean a bowl game, it might mean, or, you know, the ultimate bowl, whether it's the Rose or the Sugar or what have you. And then you have a case where it kind of brings out it's a moneymaker, too, because it's at a neutral site, and so people are going to travel from distances where their two teams are coming from to play there and all that sort of stuff. But there's something unique about the Big 12 in terms of this round robin where everybody plays everybody. Everybody knows everybody. You settle it for 9 games, and you just kind of see what happens. And I'm sorry, but the minutia, I think that a lot of people in college football, even though these conference championship games will probably not go away anytime soon, but from a traditional standpoint, I kind of like the way the Big 12 does it, because you got to go out there and you got to beat every single person in your conference, or most of them, in order to win it.
Yeah, now the other thing, and one of my problems with the conference championship games, this is something that I noticed it last year, and I saw it this year. Okay, Ohio State plays Wisconsin. Okay, if Ohio State wins, they got a chance to go to the playoffs. Did Wisconsin have a chance to go to the playoffs? No, there was no way they were going to the playoffs. That is a problem for me when you have two teams playing each other in a championship game, and one team is playing for a whole lot more than the other team is. You know, maybe if it was a play-in game, but, you know, I really kind of have a problem that, and you know me, I'm a little bit of a conspiracy theorist, but I really think that if I'm running a conference and I've got a 12-0 team playing a 8-4 team, I'm really going to want my 12-0 team to win that game.
You have to. You don't have any choice, because if you don't, gets knocked out of the opportunity to play for a conference champion. For a national championship, perhaps, and then your representative in your Big Six Bowl is a 9-4 team. So it really kind of changes the dynamics and that sort of thing. So.
Well, it changes the dynamics, and how much flack has the Big 12 caught about being the only conference left out of the playoffs last year?
Tons.
Wisconsin beats Ohio State, and how much flack do you think the Big 10 would have caught?
Absolutely.
Pretty much the same amount.
Mm-hmm. No doubt.
Okay. So when we go in and we look at that, now what we haven't talked a whole lot about is Oklahoma State's defense. Now, they have given up some points. Texas Tech hung 53 on them. Iowa State, not an offensive powerhouse, put 31 on them. Texas put 27 on them, and Texas definitely isn't an offensive powerhouse. Kansas State put 34 on them. They have a pretty good line, and they have a pretty good secondary, and they have one just killer defensive lineman. So,
it's a good front. Now, they lost Jimmy Bean to a torn ACL a couple of weeks ago, so that kind of changes their front a little bit. But Emmanuel Ogba, their defensive end, who was a Big 12 player of the year, or defensive player of the year last year, probably going to win it again this year, although he's going to have a pretty decent fight with maybe Charles Tapper over at Oklahoma, and of course Baylor's Andrew Billings for that. But he's an amazing rusher. He's so aggressive. He has just exceptional body control. And I think that really, what makes him dynamic or makes him unique to this whole thing is the fact that he's just got a great, great burst. And then you got Darian Daniels, who's a true freshman from Dallas Bishop Dunn, whom Baylor was making a run at, but really the Bears kind of pulled off of him for, because they had their own ideas on how they wanted their defensive linemen to look. Then you got Vincent Taylor, who's another one, in that group. It's a great defensive front. I would argue to you now, especially with the injuries to Bo Blackshear and Andrew Billings still playing with a not a 100% ankle, and Sean Oakland, who will play, but, of course, he's in with a knee injury as well, that Oklahoma State's defensive front is probably the best front of the Big 12 right now. I think that's, we'll see if that carries them, but on Saturday night. But I think that, to me, Stephen, I think this game on Saturday night, I kind of think it's a referendum on the Baylor offensive line. They had a rough day against Oklahoma. They've got to play far better. They've got to protect Jarrett Stidham even more. They've got to they've got to create some lanes for, Shaq Linwood. And if they struggle to any degree in one or especially in both of those areas, they're going to have a problem. And I think they're going to be have a major, major problem in terms of trying to win this game. So I think it's down to those five guys that are going to dictate how Baylor comes out of this game on Friday. I mean, Saturday, excuse me.
I'm sorry, yeah. And let's also kind of, before we move into our next part, let's kind of talk about the college football playoff rankings. I thought, you've never heard me say this before, but I thought that Baylor got a little bit of the benefit of the doubt in this by only dropping to 10. Mm-hmm. I think they got respect for how hard they played Oklahoma. Where you said, well, then why are they ranked so low? Well, Baylor's 8-1. Every other team that's in the top 10 is 9-1 or 10-0.
Right.
So Baylor's got the worst record of all the teams in the top 10.
I think what's going to happen here is, I think there were two things that were at play here. Is that one, everyone had the memory of what happened at TCU when it got beat up by Oklahoma State, and how the Frogs they dropped from 8 to 15, I think it was. And then you're thinking about you combine that, and then you're thinking, okay, Baylor just lost at home to Oklahoma, and they're thinking the same thing. It's maybe a conditioned mentality, thinking that it was going to be just as bad. And I think that's really what happened here. And so the fact that they only dropped to 10, it keeps them within striking distance. They're going to have – now, it's going to be a really difficult road. They're going to have to beat number 6, and they're going to have to beat number 18 in the next 2 weeks in order to do that, 6 being Oklahoma State, 18 being TCU next week.
And then they got to beat a Texas team.
Right. Who probably – that may or may not be playing for its bowl eligibility. Depends on what Texas does with Texas Tech on Thanksgiving. And so, it's, I don't know. There's a lot of interesting things in play here. I think Baylor, the one thing about them is that they're still in it. They're not out of it. Of course, if they lose, then they're out of it. But I mean, if they win in Stillwater, I think it really changes how they view these last two games. If they don't, then they're going to have to say, well, we can still go 10-2. Have a great season, try and get ready for a bowl game. So I think everything hangs in the balance on Saturday night at 6:30.
I do not believe that Baylor has been the underdog in over a year.
I think you're right on that, yeah.
So this is a little bit different territory for the Bears. And I was just pulling up Texas record. Right now they're 4-6. And they're 0-4 away. They're bad away from home. They shouldn't win this game, but I have had probably the most frequent question I got for the first 3 days after that Oklahoma game between Oklahoma and Baylor is, how did the Longhorns beat Oklahoma?
Nobody knows. By the way, the line in the game is either a pick or Oklahoma State by one. So that shows you what Las Vegas thinks of this game. It's pretty much straight up on this. So we'll see.
On our recruiting. Okay. A lot of guys went to the Oklahoma game. Can you give me a little bit of reaction?
Well, I mean, obviously, Levon Onozorski of Allen, their defensive end. It was an official visit for him. Went well. I think he won't make a decision until January when he gets done taking his last official visit there. I know Matt Clare will be coming on here in just a few moments to discuss it further, because he'll talk about a couple of the JUCO players that were there. Devin DuVernay announced who was there. And, you know, of course, his brother, twin brother Donovan, has already committed to Baylor. Devin is going to be making his announcement this coming Friday. I think everything points to him picking the Bears based on, and so if you read our board, you'll see what I mean by that. But then it kind of makes sense. You've just visited Baylor, and now you're going to turn around and announce on Friday. You can do a little deductive reasoning and kind of see where it's taking you there. But they said
And his brother's also committed, so that's got to have some influence.
Right. Yeah. And that's been a factor in this too, is that he wanted to, you know, that he and his brother wanted to play at a certain spot. Now, of course, Donovan is not as highly ranked as Devin is. So Devin's a national recruit. Donovan's a solid Division I recruit. And so now we'll see what happens here on Friday. But again, Matt will probably discuss a lot more of that with you here in our next, in one of these segments.
Okay. All right. And welcome back to the Sikkim Sportscast. I'm Steve Cook, and we are here with Rivals recruiting guru, Matt Clare. And Matt, how have things been going for you?
Oh, pretty good. How you doing, Steve?
Except for the Bears having lost last week, things are going pretty smooth. It's always a lot more fun to write about victories than it is about losses. But what can I tell you? Okay, you are lined up. We've got several people that we want to ask about. The first are a couple of JUCO kids. We have Jamarcus King, and what can you tell me about him?
Jamarcus King, that's a player I wrote about recently, but he's a tall, rangy corner. He's a junior college player currently, and he's going to be a December graduate. So he has, you know, he's had a different recruiting cycle, right? Coming out of high school and out of junior college. He's originally from the southeast, the state of Alabama, so there is a draw to the SEC. At one point in time, he was committed to Auburn, but he backed off of that. And, you know, I talked to him recently, and I'll have an update here this week. But, you know, he had very positive things to say about the visit. He was hosted by Orion Stewart and spent a lot of time with Coach Dishman. And, you know, he said he liked what he saw from the university and the city of Waco. So, you know, everything was positive. But, again, like I said, you know, maybe being from that Alabama area and that region, maybe the SEC and the recommitment to Auburn is the ultimate draw. But I do think that the Baylor coaches, you know, really kind of put in a good effort this weekend and showed him a lot.
Okay, so you think Baylor's still got a pretty good chance with him?
Well, I do. I mean, anytime you get an athlete on campus, you know, I think that he had good things to say, but, you know, in the long run, I think it's going to be a battle with Auburn and really any other school that kind of comes in. I mean, these next couple of weeks for these mid-semester enrollees, I mean, it's going to be pretty interesting.
Yeah, so he's a December graduate, so he's got to make a decision pretty quick, doesn't he?
Yeah, I mean, you've got the Thanksgiving break, and then after that, I mean, they've got to sign some paperwork, and they've got to know where to ship their boxes or where to kind of point the truck to. So, I mean, it's coming down to crunch time. I mean, kids like that, they've got 2 weeks, and they know it.
Okay, now, he was playing JUCO ball here in Texas already, wasn't he?
Jamarcus, let me look. I don't think so. I want to say I get my JUCOs mixed up, so I don't want you to get me lying. But I don't know if it's Texas or not. Let me see. No, it's actually Kansas. So most of the Midwest, that Kansas and Mississippi, those JUCOs, well, in the West Coast some, but those produce the most talent. So usually a kid is out of that region there in Kansas.
Okay. All right. Now, we also have Tyree Horton. who is a JUCO that Baylor's looking at. What can you tell me about him?
Well, I mean, this is another interesting prospect. You've got a four-star JUCO player again, but this was a young man that was committed to Florida State for quite some time. Even back in the summer, he posted it and deleted it, but he had mentioned, I'm going to take my visit to Baylor, blah, 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 in the fall. Well, he finally did this weekend. So, I mean, you're talking about a young man with offers from Alabama and Florida State, like I said, who did have his commitment, Oklahoma. He's taking a visit there. So, I mean, you're going to have competition. It looks like he's going to try and visit TCU as well. Any time, I would say this time of year, you got to look at these profiles, and they're somewhat updated. But a lot of these schools are really starting to reach out and make more offers right now. We haven't seen that from Baylor, but they're definitely, you're starting to see some of these prospects that they've really been going after start to rise in. So we need to get some more details from Tyree on the visit itself. But in terms of, filling a need and doing it with talent that can help right away, I mean, that's a really good prospect to have in town.
Yeah, and Baylor has always been, they like to work primarily, like if you look at, say, Kansas State, they live off JUCOs. But if you look at Baylor, they really, they'll bring JUCOs in, but they really seem to try to plug some guys in where they have some guys that didn't pan out, or where they just feel like they may not have all the prospects they want. Is that your kind of read on Baylor's philosophy on that?
I mean, yeah, different schools do it different ways. And, I mean, I think the number one thing you see is depth. And so outside linebacker, defensive end, and offensive tackle is where you've seen the Baylor coaches really kind of go after JUCO players. And you just see different things with different teams. They may have a senior graduating, and they might be grooming the next guy, but, you have to have your assurances as well that, if somebody dings an ankle or, needs to come out for a series or two, that you've got guys behind them, and you've got to build depth throughout your roster. So sometimes when you've got a kid with, 3 years to play too, and especially, with Tyree and Jamarcus, these are guys that can help immediately. So that's another thing, the coaches really try to address during those official visits is showing them the depth chart, showing them the defense, showing them kind of what they've got and what they need to compete for. And so, you just got to trust that the coaches did that. And getting those two guys would be a pretty big haul.
Yeah, and, and that is the thing. Like you say, when you get a JUCO kid, you've only got them for 3 years max. But you've also got somebody that's already got 2 years of playing experience. And so that, can give you a big boost because they're already playing at a higher level, maybe not against Div 1 competition, but they're playing against better than high school competition, and they've got 2 more years starting experience or 2 more years playing experience, probably starters if they're getting recruited by D1 schools.
Yeah, I mean, right now it just depends on the relationship with the coaches. And, I mean, like I said, right now it's closing time, so I'm sure there were some very direct conversations, and I'm sure the coaches, said what they needed to say, and that was probably, part of the visit. But like I said, he was hosted by Ryan Stewart, spent time with the coaches, and I'm sorry, this is Jamarcus, but spent time with the coaches, and there was a lot of one-on-one time on Sunday. So they're definitely trying to sit down with these young men and close the deal.
Okay, now, we've got one that I'm getting ready to go here. I'm only going to try and pronounce this once.
Okay. Yeah. You want a drum roll? Drum roll?
Okay. Let's go. Levi Onwuzurika. Okay.
I think you nailed it.
Wow. I want to say something. I've been saving up for that. Okay. He's a senior defensive end D tackle out of Allen High School. What can you tell me about him?
Levi's a really great young man. He's a yes sir, no sir type of kid, very mild-mannered, but very smart. I met him at our rivals camp here recently in the off season. I believe you did as well. Really great to talk to, and very big, and what's funny is you've got, he plays for Allen, which is like, the odd creation of Texas high school football that resides in the Metroplex, right? I mean, the 60,000 person stadium or whatever it is, and all the state championships. How does this guy, even a year ago, how's he flying under the radar, right? And that's when I first started talking to him. Now he's got offers from you know, you name the school, he's probably had offer or coaches stop by. I mean, this is a big kid. I mean, he's got all the size and he's got all the talent. And so really what it sounded like from the interview that he did with Kevin is that he's narrowed things down, and he might not have gone into too many specifics, but I mean, obviously a visit to Baylor at this point in the recruiting process, I mean, it has to be a good thing. So I think the main competition there is Michigan, and you know, he really stressed academics. So, you know, you've got to respect that, and you got to just kind of see how it pans out with him.
Yeah, and okay, he's like 6'3" and 250, so he could probably still add some bulk to that 6'3".
Oh, absolutely. I mean, these kids are, you know, barely 18 years old, so they're going to get into a strength and conditioning program in college, and they're definitely going to put on some weight.
Okay, scale of 1 to 10, what do you think are Baylor's chances?
I mean, I've got to say it's 50-50 Baylor or Michigan here. I don't see Georgia as a serious contender. You never know when kids visit Arizona State. I mean, they are landing big-time recruits right now, and it's a beautiful campus. So I just always say fear the visit to Arizona State. But I think that's an outlier. I really think Baylor, Michigan. But, I mean, this is a young man who, I mean, other schools have recruited him. Other schools have offered. I know back when I met him over a year ago, he has an older brother, I believe, that goes to Texas Tech. So I mean, he's really doing his own thing and sorting through a lot of these different options. So clearly, like I said, at this point in the year, he's definitely considering Baylor, and he's building those relationships if he's visiting at this point in time.
Well, actually, if having been to Michigan, if I was Baylor and I was trying to recruit him, I would send him to Michigan about the middle of I'm telling you something. Me being a Texas kid, that's Michigan during the summer is awesome. During the winter, anyway.
Those coaches are making a push. You know, we'll talk about another young man later. That you know, these kids are all about Michigan right now. So I mean, got to take that into consideration. And I think it's a serious opponent when it comes to the recruiting trail.
Well, Michigan's got the history. They've got the 100,000-seat stadium, and Harbaugh is kind of a rock star. He was an NFL coach. He's been to the Super Bowl. That's pretty enticing right there.
Yeah, that's why I said you got to take those guys seriously.
Yeah. Okay. Now, we've got also we had talked about the next guy we want to talk about, and the last guy we were going to talk about is Jordan Elliott, and he is a defensive tackle. Give me a little biographical sketch on him. And actually, I'm sorry, we got one more that we want to talk about after Jordan. Okay, but give me a little sketch on Jordan.
Jordan was committed to, you know, Baylor for a period of time. You know, quite a bit actually, and was, you know, I mean, during his time committed to Baylor, pretty vocal about his decision. He then decommitted and then committed to UH, and that lasted for, I don't know, 3, maybe 4 months, if I'm being generous. And then after that, he's since decommitted, and that was, I want to say, 1 to 2 weeks before Baylor camp in the Houston area, which he stopped by. Spent time with the coaches. He didn't work out or anything, but he was back up there. And at that point in time, he said, I have a top five. And I know that he included Baylor. He included LSU. He included A&M. And I think it was Texas and Michigan. Or at the time, it might have even been USC or something else. But, you know, from there, he's kind of, you know, he'll tweet about Texas. He'll tweet about, you know, Michigan. He'll tweet about this. He'll tweet about that. I mean, to him, clearly, you know, these commitments, he's open to the process, and he's kind of letting it go with the flow, if you will. So he could take a visit to Michigan next weekend and say, I'm a Wolverine, you know, or you know, end up signing back to Baylor. I mean, with Jordan, what I wanted to put out there was this is the year of the recommit. It really is. I mean, you've got Baylor just got their wide receiver back in the fold, right? We talked about that.
Mm-hmm.
But – you know, now you've got Oklahoma State just pulled in another recommitment. You've got kids. I mean, now you look over at TCU, you've got kids leaving TCU, three of them in the past 2 weeks. And like we talked about earlier, these JUCO kids are making these decisions in 2 weeks, and you got a boatload of kids visiting for this past weekend. So, I mean, things are about to start happening on the recruiting trail. You know, regardless of the number of commits, I mean, I think you're going to see some moving and shaking. But,
okay,
I mean,
that's
going to
be kind of interesting.
You know, mm-hmm. Well, no, I was just going to say, sorry to kind of round that out, but in the case of Jordan, you know, your guess is as good as mine. He obviously visited, and, you know, we'll get more details on his opinion and where he stands. But, you know, he's told me very recently that Michigan is his leader. But like I said before, he's committed to two schools already. And, you know, tomorrow he might be all about Texas. So we'll just have to see where that goes.
Yeah, and, you know, that's one that's always been a little bit tricky to me is that, you know, Kevin always just says recruiting is weird. I always say that recruiting is like getting a prom date at a small-town high school where everybody cheats because everybody commits to everybody, and then a lot of people change partners, a lot. And so, you know, and like you say, it's – and do you think that maybe – you know, they're starting to recruit kids like 10th grade now. Do you think maybe that makes a difference? That, you know, we're just, that they're getting recruited so heavy, so young.
No, I know. Well, you know, maybe, right, to an extent. But I think that you have to, if you look at it from this point of view, yes, that is happening. But you also have a lot of kids who, you know, maybe their parents didn't play sports or don't understand the process or don't have time to mentor the process or to keep them away from the limelight. I mean, you have so many kids that rush into Twitter, you know, full speed ahead or, you know, accept any interview and do this, that, and the other. And it's just because they don't know any better. And if they, you know, had somebody to help them, you know, maybe that would be different. So I think there's a little bit of a give and a take there. A lot of the coaches do the very best that they can, but, you know, they're only there for so many hours of the day. So they can't really control the new social media aspect, and they can't really control the growing number of recruiting reporters. So, you know, these things are going to happen, and, you know, it's always happened in recruiting, even when it was just being written about in a newspaper and sent around in magazine articles. I mean, kids have always changed their mind, and, you know, they reserve the right to. It's a two-way street.
Okay, and the last thing we want to talk about, Devin DuVernay said he is going to make an announcement, and he said he was probably just going to tweet it, but DuVernay said he's going to make his announcement on Friday. He's a Rivals 100, and his brother has already committed to Baylor, Donovan. So talk to me a little about Devin and what he brings. How did he get to be a Rivals 100?
Oh, well, first of all, he's Rivals 100 because he has legitimate, you know, elite speed. This is a state champion, state finalist in the state track and field, 100-meter relays, you name it. When he steps up down there in Austin for the state, you know, this spring, people will be paying attention because, you know, he puts up these insane times. So that's 1A. But when he gets on the football field, you know, I met him 2 years ago at a camp up in Dallas, and, you know, he just makes it look easy. You know, when you've got these, you know, shorter, compact receivers, they win with speed. But in Devin's case, I think he's versatile enough to win with his route running. But he's very compact, and when I say that, I mean, you know, he's listed at 5'11", 193. You know, there's nothing to say that you know, maybe that's closer to 6 foot, and maybe now he's closer to 200 plus. I mean, so he's very compact, and, you know, I just think he would be the perfect fit for these Big 12 offenses, and obviously Baylor is heavily in the mix. I mean, they were his very first offer, and then, like you said, Rivals 100, you name the school, they've probably offered. So there's the why, but, you know, they were his first offer. His brother's committed. I would agree with Kevin. You know, I think it's Baylor. He has visited the other schools, and, you know, I think that there's legitimate interest in the others. But at the end of the day, when I first met him, he said, yeah, I think me and my brother are going to do our own thing. Well, then when I talked to him eventually, you know, several months later, he said, you know, yeah, we're talking about it. So I think, you know, that dynamic might change as well. I mean, I think it would be cool for them to play together. Most people kind of see that as a natural fit. But, you know, nothing would surprise me in recruiting either, Steve.
Okay.
Yeah.
Matt, I do appreciate it, and we will holler at you next time, and you take care.
All right.
Let's go in and take a look at some of the games around the country. Now, the only national game that I thought our readers would really be interested in was number 9, Michigan State. They're 9-1 and 5-1 at number 3, Ohio State, 10-0 and 6-0. Now, both of these teams, Michigan State, have like a 1-point last-second loss to Nebraska, and normally the last second of the game has been cruel to Nebraska for the last few years, but this
right.
time they pulled one out. And both of these teams still have a legitimate chance at getting into the playoffs. How do you see it?
Well, I was absolutely ready to say that Michigan State was going to pull this off and win in Columbus a couple weeks ago. Then they had the bizarre loss to Ohio State to Nebraska, where Nebraska's receiver, who basically took himself out of bounds, but the officials ruled and then replay confirmed for whatever reason, and the Big Ten backed it up, but it was clearly a blown call where the Nebraska receiver was not forced out of bounds by the Michigan State defensive back, but yet they said he was, so that made him eligible to come back and catch the pass with a game-winning touchdown. Go figure. But you can look at it and say, well, Michigan State's had a couple of, has won a lot of these late games, i.e. the Cotton Bowl last year, i.e. the ridiculous finish against Michigan a couple weeks or last month. So maybe it's kind of turnaround or just kind of evens out, whatever you want to say it. But I think that I'm going to go with Ohio State because obviously it's at home. Number 2, Michigan State, the one thing that they still have some issues with is giving up the deep ball in secondary. They had a lot of problems against the Buckeyes last year when JT Barrett was starting at quarterback last year, and he completed some deep balls on Michigan State secondary. I think he'll have that kind of success again. Ezekiel Elliott, who's probably the dark horse to win the Heisman Trophy now, the Ohio State running back.
Mm-hmm.
I think that he'll do enough damage there. I think Ohio State will get enough stops, and I think they'll beat the Spartans.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Ohio State, and I think that the thing for me on it is that Ohio State has not had to count on the miracle finishes that Michigan State has in the last little while. And I think that overall they're a more solid team. I think that their defense is probably a little bit better. And they don't seem to be a team that gets nervous on the big stage. I mean, obviously they're on the big stage a lot. So, and it's at home at Ohio State, and that's a 100,000 seat stadium, and it will be packed.
Yep.
So, all right, in the Big 12, and there's some other games of interest, but none of them are going to affect the playoff picture, so let's kind of pass on those. Texas and Texas Tech are both off before they have their showdown on Thanksgiving. And so we have, starting, we have West Virginia at 5-4, 2-4 in the Big 12 at Kansas, 0-10 and 0-7. And you know, West Virginia is the only team with a winning record that Baylor has beaten.
Yep, that is true. I heard that. And they had to win their last two just to get to that spot, too.
But
they'll
yeah,
take
but, hey, we'll take it.
Exactly. They'll take it, and they'll win in Lawrence this week. Now, remember, they lost at KU a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But that was when that team was kind of reeling. This is a pretty good defensive club that Deanna Holgerson's team has. And I think that they'll do enough and that they'll take care of business. Skylar Howard is a pretty solid quarterback. He's been kind of up and down, but there's a pretty good running game there between Rochelle Shell and, oh gosh, I'm forgetting the other kids. Lynn starts with an L, but anyway. I think that West Virginia wins. If West Virginia wins this game, then they become bowl eligible, which is something they do. And if they win this, then they're probably going to finish. They probably have a really good shot. Wendell Smallwood is who it is. Mm-hmm. Wendell Smallwood is the other running back. They'll probably have a chance to run the table and go 8-4 because their final two games after KU are Iowa State at home and then at Kansas State, I believe.
Now, next we have, oh, and I am going to also take West Virginia. You know what they say? Nobody walks into the Jayhawks stadium expecting to win, especially the Jayhawks.
Exactly.
Then we have Iowa State, 3-7, 2-5 in the Big 12 at Kansas State, 3-6 and 0-6. And this is probably one of the worst teams that Bill Snyder has rolled out in the last 8 or 9 years.
Yeah, it's really bad. There's not a lot of offensive, you know, there's really not a lot of offensive options there with this group. I'm going to go with the Cyclones on the road. I just kind of like the way they're playing right now. Now, that hasn't translated into wins in a lot of the cases, but I just kind of like the way. I really like Mike Warren, their redshirt freshman running back. He's over 1,000 yards. They just seem to have some things working there. I think obviously if Iowa State could find a way to maybe pull off these last two, if they win at Kansas State and they win at West Virginia, they don't go to a bowl, but they go to 5-7. I know the Paul Rhodes situation is up in the air, but I'm going to go with the Cyclones here.
Okay, you know, I'm going to go with the Cyclones also. Now, they got – the other thing about the Cyclones is that they played – they have actually played a fairly tough schedule because, you know, they played Iowa. Iowa's undefeated in non-conference. And then they played Toledo, and everybody thinks when you schedule, like, a team like Toledo, oh, that's an automatic win. But Toledo's, what, 9-1 right now, something like that?
I think so, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then they got KU. They lost to Texas Tech. Texas Tech bats a lot of people. Then they played TCU and Baylor. Then they beat Texas. Then they had Oklahoma and Oklahoma State. They got KSU and West Virginia coming up. It's too late for them to get bowl eligible. But I really think that they'll be able to come out, roll out at like 5-7 at the end of the game, at the end of the year, or they've got a good chance of it. And so I'm going to Iowa State also. Now we have number 18, TCU, 9-1 and 6-1 at number 7, Oklahoma at 9-1 and 6-1. And have you ever seen two teams with the exact same record that the injuries to Boykin and Dotson have really changed TCU's prospects.
Yeah, the whole thing has just kind of changed. Gary, it was announced by Gary Patterson earlier on Wednesday that Josh Doctson, his talented wide receiver with the wrist injury, will not play the final two games against Oklahoma this Saturday and then Baylor the Friday after Thanksgiving, which is a huge blow to their receiving game. And then you got Trevon Boykin, who's dealing with a high ankle sprain. Even if he plays, to what extent he will play, sprains are what they are, as we've seen firsthand with Andrew Billings. I just don't know how effective, because he's a guy that needs to make play with his feet and he's going to be limited by it. And I'm going to go with Oklahoma. I think Oklahoma wins this game. You know, maybe a couple touchdowns, and I think TCU's kids will play their guts off. They always do, and you know, I'm sure they're going to draw upon, you know, what happened 10 years ago in 2005 when they were coming off a losing season and they went to number 5 Oklahoma and won there. But I just think that they're in such a bad way right now with their key injuries. I think I saw something where 33 or maybe 24 guys on this team have either missed time, are out for the year, or dealing with something. And I saw a quote from Gary Patterson saying this is worse he's ever seen it in 33 years. We should all have such problems with the team that's 9-1. But having said that, I just think the Frogs are so wounded. And yeah, they've got a couple of kids. You know, they've got a couple of rookie quarterbacks in there. Foster Sawyer looks like he might get the start if Boykin doesn't go. But I just think that it just changes. And TCU's running game is not that great. It's been very inconsistent. And I think Oklahoma, they will not be flat. They know what they have. It's a blue blood program. It knows what it has to do in order to put itself in a position. They will not look past this. They also remember what happened. They also remember what happened in Fort Worth last year when they lost. So, you know, there's a lot for them to draw upon, and they'll be ready. And I think they'll beat TCU. Maybe 14 points is what I'll go with.
Yeah, I'm thinking that the thing about Boykin was that Boykin covered up a lot of shortcomings in the TCU running game because mm-hmm. Oregon was their running game. He's a decent, he's a good passer. You know, I've seen him make some really good passes, but he needs, you know, he has to move to make those passes. You know, he's not a pocket passer. He is a guy right. that extends the play. You know, he gets out, he waits for the secondary coverage to break down. You know, God mm-hmm. forbid you play a zone against TCU because Boykin extends the play and makes you pay for it. Whether you're right. doing man or whether you're doing zone. But if he can't extend that play, you know, he's not – his receivers really need to be open. So anyway, I'm with you on it. I think Oklahoma, and I think Oklahoma can take it. The only possibly having a chance is if Oklahoma's a little hungover from the Baylor game because they put a lot of emotion into the Baylor game.
No doubt.
And finally, we have number 10, Baylor, 8-1, 5-1 at number 6, Oklahoma State, 10-0, 7-0. We've already broken that down. So I'm going to go ahead and say it's really scary for me to go up there to Oklahoma State, but I'm going to go ahead and take the Bears by like 3 points. Hopefully the Baylor defense will hold up. And I'm going to go like 31-28.
I don't think you'd be wrong with that pick. I think for me, as much as I've said before that I think that Baylor can win this, has its best chance ever since 1939 to win up in Stillwater, I just have too many concerns about the way the offensive line is playing right now. I have really concerns about how effective Jarrett Stidham is going to be and what this offense actually look like here. And so I'm going to go Oklahoma State, maybe 35-31 here. I hope I'm wrong, but I just think that if Baylor was healthier and if they were playing a lot better right now, I wouldn't have any problems picking the Bears in this game. I think talent-wise, I think they're better than Oklahoma State. They're just not healthy enough, in my view, and their offensive line is not playing well enough in order for them to pull this off. Again, I hope I'm wrong, but I'm going to go with the Cowboys again about 35-31.
Okay, and that's how we see it, and we will catch you next time on the Sikkim Sportscast.